circulation ingress egress, whereas accessory furniture would be permitted, one shade structure, 120 square feet in size, table or tables totaling no more than 24 square feet in size, which is kind of your typical, say, like 3x8 table, and then your 8 chairs, which again is standard for kind of what fits around those standard size tables. So we jump ahead, we'll get to 3 and 4 in a little bit. Recommendation 5 is to require a minimum setback of 9 feet for food trucks that are vending towards the public right away, whereas no setback for food trucks vending internally towards the lot. And then that shade, canopies, tables, chairs would be allowed within that little setback buffer, not in ingress, egress, or circulation, just in that kind of your protected private area. And then to allow zoning administrators to potentially increase or decrease that setback requirement based on individual lots. Recommendation 6, that a temporary use permit would not be granted on private property within 100 feet of the city park. Moving ahead to the zoning code amendments, this is where we are looking for city council to direct staff to process a zoning code amendment to enact recommendations number 3 and 4. So these two recommendations would have to go through planning commission as well as back to city council for official approval. Recommendation number 3 would be to amend Paso Robles Municipal Code section 2169120 to require a temporary use permit for all food trucks operating in the city vending to the public, with the exception of a food truck operating as a caterer for an event that's not required to have a TUP. Recommendation number 4, to amend Paso Robles Municipal Code section 2169120 to require on-site commercial businesses hosting more than 7 events in a year to obtain a temporary use permit for food trucks to participate in reoccurring events. Again, it's really key to focus on the fact that recommendation 4 has that 7 events in a year is what kicks you over that threshold of needing a temporary use permit. And with that, we can open it up to public comment.
Okay, thank you, Piper. I think this is the first time we've seen, coming back from the ad hoc, you know, the work you guys did. I think what I'd like to try to do is allow council to ask direct questions of these item 6 recommendations to Piper and get us questions only at this point. Then I'm going to allow the public to come up and also address this item and then bring it back for us for full discussion. I'd like to have a report from the ad hoc members too on this. So I'll open up then to council. Any questions directly?
The ad hoc.
Well, I was going to have, I was just questions only at this point. So do you have any questions on what has been presented at this point?
I just want to clarify on number 6, the temporary use permit on private property within 100 feet of the park. So if it's just a private event, and they're within 100 feet, and it's just the one day, they don't need a temporary use permit, and the food truck can be there?
That is correct.
Okay.
If it's just an exclusive event for that only.
Correct.
Right?
And it's just the one day.
Yep. Quote Gregor.
Yeah, and Piper, and that also includes all the special events in the park, correct?
Yes, so that does include community events, and then that's where Parks and Recreation gets a little bit more involved as well.
Yes, very good. Thank you.
Okay. Chris, anything?
There was a lot of information in there, and I just want to make sure everything got captured through the translation. So just to go back, it is kind of to piggyback what's been mentioned before, kind of the distinction of a food truck that is operating as a food truck as opposed to a food truck that's operating as a caterer, as opposed to a food truck that is operating at a special event downtown. If you could just maybe summarize that.
Yes, so the biggest distinction is kind of being secondary to an event. So whether that be a community event, a private event, say it's Jill's Winery. Jill's Winery event could be open for their members, or Jill's Winery event could be open to the public. But it's the fact that the food truck is invited to attend their event, and it's not, the food truck is not the kind of independently operating outside of the event when it's part of an event.
In other words, exclusivity of that event, they don't need a TUP. Anything beyond that, they need, just for one day, they're still going to have a TUP?
Yes, unless it exceeds the either one-day exception, or if it's the, again, a on-site commercial businesses have less than seven events, then they don't need a TUP. But if it is more reoccurring, we do want to make sure they're a little more regulated, we know where they're going to be, what they're going to be doing, that's when it would trigger that TUP.
And that was more than five events a year, I think you said?
Seven.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Chris?
Not to throw too much confusion into this, but some of the questions that I received after this came out, we had discussed carts at some point. I don't want to talk about it tonight, but I think it warrants a discussion somewhere after this is settled to come back and have a discussion on food carts or other types of businesses that operate carts. That might be helpful, and just bring that to council's attention.
Okay. Fred, you have any questions?
Yes, just one other clarification. Let's say you mentioned an event where a bat winery, for instance, wanted to do 12 events, one a month. Even though they were planning that, they probably wouldn't have to apply for the permit until the 8th event, correct?
Yes. As planning staff, typically if we have an on-site commercial business that comes to us saying, I want to host an event, I want to do an event, or we have a food truck that says, I want to partake in this event, we will offer them and advise them. If they assume that is going to be the case, that they're going to exceed that threshold, they can. There's really no harm in, say, you plan on having 12 and you only have six to have the temporary use permit. It outlines the rules very well. It allows to be in good coordination with city staff, enforcement officers, just to have that paperwork on hand. So there's no harm in getting it if, say, you're not required to meet that 7-day threshold.
Good. And then that I was thinking of the same sort of thing. They may decide they want to do this, but events can change it, circumstances can change it. Yes, thank you.
Correct.
Okay. Good on questions for council at this point? Okay, thank you, Piper. Maybe stand by, we might need you a little closer. We'll go ahead and open up then to public on this item. Anybody wishing to address the council on items for the food truck? And we're, again, the six recommendations that is before us at this point. Bill, come on forward. Welcome. Yeah, you're not on. No, he needs to.
I'm a little bit confused because.
Oh, there you go.
Now I'm live. Okay.
There you go.
I'm a little bit confused because the recommendations that are being seen here are different than the recommendations that we had at our last ad hoc committee meeting. There was a recommendation number seven as well. Anyways, Mayor Hammond, members of the City Council, my name is Bill Saylor. My wife and I own Yabba Dabba Dogs. We've been in business since 2018, operating with a county health permit and a passportable city business license. I'd like to address some of the concerns that I have regarding the recommendations tonight. First, I'd like to address the fact that complaints about the food trucks increased dramatically between April and August of 2025. I actually requested and received complaint documentations from the Passer PD. The documents show that a total of 49 complaints were received by the Paso Robles Police Department during that time period. Of those 49 complaints, only 16, that's 32%, dealt with food trucks. The other 33 complaints, 68%, dealt with the fruit, flower, trinket vendors, and people selling food in parking lots and out of their cars. Of the 16 complaints that dealt with food trucks, very few dealt with any of the recommendations presented to you tonight. Recommendation number 3 and 4 is recommending that a food truck operating in one location for more than 1 day to 1 year must have a TUP to operate. In essence, this recommendation requires that a food truck operator have a TUP on the first day of setting up operation in town. The first day, at least this is what, I'm going off of what was recommended at the last ad hoc meeting. We are food trucks, and the nature of our business is to be mobile. That's why we are called food trucks. And by nature, we need to be able to move from one location to another location if one location is not profitable. I'd like to see the recommendation be if a food truck anticipates being in one location for more than 30 days, up to 1 year, they must obtain a TUP. That makes a little bit more sense. It's more reasonable and more business friendly. Additionally, requesting that a business within the city limits hosting 7 or more events a year, i.e. like the poorhouse, apply for a TUP is just adding another administrative and financial burden to businesses already struggling in an uncertain and competitive business arena. There was a recommendation number 7 from the ad hoc committee, and that had to deal with recommending to restrict or prohibit food trucks from the TC1 zoning district downtown core area. Is that still on the table? Thank you. I'm fine with recommendation number 6 then. Okay, I'm going to bypass some of this stuff. Lastly, I would, there's duplication of paperwork services here. We cannot get a city business license unless we have our county health permit. The county health department requires us to have a commissary form, requires us to have a restroom agreement, et cetera, et cetera. The city is now also requesting that we complete those same documents for the city. I would like to see the city say, if you have your permit, which was done by the county health department, we don't need to see all that information. You don't need to fill out all of that information. It should just be a given.
Okay.
Last thing is that we've had ordinances on the book for some time. And I think what brought all this to a head is that the ordinances were not being enforced. Now we're coming up with new ordinances and requirements for food trucks. I'd like to have an answer sometime. I think we deserve it. How that's going to be enforced and who's going to be doing the enforcement. We couldn't enforce it before. Are we going to enforce it now? And just to let you know, the cost for a TUP permit is $206, which is another added expense. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, anyone else? Welcome.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jerry Torres. I'm actually the owner of the ice cream shop on Spring Street. Before we start, council members, we just wanted to make sure on December 8th, we dropped off a letter. Just wanted to see if you guys received it in regards to a mobile food truck that started its operation next to us. So I'm just going to read the letter that I had on there. I am writing this letter on behalf of Paletería Nevería Las Michoacanas, located on Spring Street in Paso Robles, to formally express our concern regarding a mobile food truck that has recently begun operating a few hundred feet from our establishment, offering similar products to like ours. As a brick and mortar business, we have made a significant financial investment in our location, equipment, and long-term presence in this community. Each year, we consistently pay taxes, city fees, required permits, and other regulations costing in order to operate responsibly in our according with local laws. Given this commitment and investment, we find it unfair that a mobile vendor can park and conduct business so close to our short storefront, competing directly with us while not bearing the same long-term operational costs and obligations that we are required to meet. Additionally, we have observed that the city appears to enforce protective measures over restrictions in certain parts of Paso Robles, but not throughout the entire city. This creates an imbalance that disadvantages businesses like ours that rely on consistent customer traffic and stability in our immediate area. We respectfully request that the City of Paso Robles review this matter and consider advocating for clearer and more uniform policies regarding how close mobile vendors can operate to establish brick and mortar businesses, especially when the products offered are similar. Our goal is not to limit competition, but to rather ensure fairness and equitable treatment for all businesses in Paso Robles. Thank you for your time and attention. We value the City of Paso Robles' continued support and commitment to local business community. We look forward to working together and solve this solution that benefits everyone.
Question before you leave, what is the address of your business?
So we saw our Mexican ice cream shop.
Yeah, what's your address?
It is 2748 Spring Street, great. Next to the Dollar Tree that just opened up down there.
Okay, good. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you for participating.
No problem. Any questions for me?
No, we're good. Perfect. Thank you, sir. Sharon, welcome.
Good evening. My name is Sharon Roden. I'm speaking as a private individual. I have a question and then a comment. The comment, we do need to protect the brick and mortar. They do have a sizable investment. Not saying that the food trucks do not, but we know that the difference in stationary versus mobile. On the TUP cost, that was brought up by Bill, how much the cost was. In the event that someone is going to have 7 events in a year, do you have to get a new TUP for each event, or is it over the whole 7 events? So if you take that $200 fee divided by the 7, it's a little different than having the 200 and something per event, unless it's movable, I would assume. But if it's in the same place, that's my question. Is it the same?
We'll get that answered. Thank you, Sharon. Anyone else in the public? Francisco?
Francisco Ramirez. Thank you, Council and Ad Hoc Committee, for doing this and getting together and allowing the community to partake, ask questions. Been going through this, and I also agree with what Bill has said about, you know, redoing and asking for double papers when one agency has already done that, and the city has access to those health department forms and permits. So I would say, why don't you request them and get those so that you have those on hand. One less thing the customer has to do for you guys and help that streamline they were talking about. I don't understand why people say, well, there's no cost in doing a small vendor like a mobile individual, like taco trucks, like food vendors. There is cost. It takes money to make money. And also, these small food vendors, they don't make the amount of money that a brick and mortar makes. There is a difference. But that doesn't mean that just because they're a smaller vendor, they're not also partaking and paying, and they have expenses. And they're paying all these permits also. So they're not doing what you guys are requiring or asking. So I just wanted to make that clear. You know, they think it's just, you know, there's only cost with the brick and mortar, but no, there's also cost with having a small vending, because these taco trucks, they're not cheap. Some of them can cost up to a house, the same price as buying a house in Paso Robles. So it is cost money also. It's not, they're not doing it for free. They're, you know, they're giving away these food trucks. And especially here in Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo County, in order to get a certain food truck, they are more stringent than they are in other counties in California. And a lot of people don't know that. So it's got to be specific. And you got to have those requirements that the health department requires in this county. And a lot of trucks don't have that, so they have to do additional work so that they can comply with the county of San Luis Obispo. Thank you.
Thank you.
Francisco?
Yeah, Pro Tem Gregory.
I don't recognize the word taco truck. I recognize the word food truck.
Food right? truck.
Or there's the new acronym, mobile unit something P.
That's good. Yeah, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else in the public? And do we have anyone online, Melissa? Oh, come on up. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Alex Zavala. I used to, since 2008, I used to operate a small little bacon wrap hot dog stand in Wayside Liquor here in Paso. Back then, nobody in town pretty much owned a mobile food truck, or probably did have them, but only used them for events or whatever. And as well as all the food vendors here that are here, noticed that the laws and regulations have changed dramatically throughout the years. But one thing, I just wasn't here on the previous meeting, and I'm trying to get back into the mobile food vending business. One thing that just wasn't really clear to me in this meeting was that, so for example, say I was to buy a mobile food truck and get all my permits through the county and through the city of Paso, and if I was to post myself outside of a business, they would need a temporary use permit, or I will.
Yeah, if you'd like. Well, go ahead, Piper. Yeah.
Testing, is that working? So if it was the on-site commercial business that was hosting the event, they could obtain the temporary use permit. Whereas if it was yourself wanting to operate independently outside of any sort of on-site commercial event, gathering, etc., then the food truck or the mobile food facility operator would obtain the temporary use permit.
Right. So one thing that I want to be clear on is, for example, I want to park outside of a laundromat selling food, you know, so, and I do that every weekend. Obviously, that's more than 8 times a year. I mean, so that's still permitted, right? But I just need a temporary use permit.
Testing. Exactly. That is the case. So if you were independently operating, like you said, just wanting to, you still meet all operational requirements, property owner permission, noise standards, ingress, egress, etc. Yourself as the vendor would come and apply for the temporary use permit, and we would grant you kind of checking off, yep, county health permit, business license, etc. Here's your temporary use permit to operate here on these days at this hours, whatever it may be requested.
Okay. But that answers my question. Yeah, that's it. Thank you, sir.
Francisco, we've already had you heard once. One quick question. Go ahead. Just question only.
So just really quick, I also wanted to add while he was come up. The gentleman was saying that, you know, they were too close to his business, within 100, they were next door or whatever. We have plazas here that have more than one Mexican restaurant in the same plaza, closer than 100 feet. You know, that is, it. I think it should be the choice of the customer to choose where they want to get an ice cream from, or a taco, or a snack. Maybe they like the way, you know, they make it, and they add a certain spice to it that the other one doesn't have. Or maybe I just want to go here today, and tomorrow I'll go to their place.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of plazas with a lot of similar businesses.
Okay, thank you, Francisco. We can only, I'm going to get in trouble. We're only really supposed to have one person at one time. So if you have a quick comment, I'll let you do it real fast, please.
John, you're killing me.
I know.
So just adding on what Francisco was saying is that the key word is mobile. We are a brick and mortar. Yep. We don't have the luxury to get up and move like they can.
Yep.
That's my statement on.
Understood. That's why we're here.
So we cannot do that.
Very good. Thank you, sir. All right. Melissa, do we have anyone online?
No, sir.
Okay. Bring it back then to council.
Can we talk about the ad hoc first?
Yes, that's what I was going to do. Bring it back to council. I'd like to get the ad hoc to report out, and then we can go to discussion with our council.
So I'm going to talk about the ad hoc first, the group. I want to thank everybody. Mr. Bosch and I had a great experience with all the food truck operators coming in and talking to us. Our staff was exceptional. We had all the details everybody wanted. And we try to cover the bases and leave everything completely open to conversation with the city. We're doing this to solve the issues and make things work better. And it was really, really wonderful. I'd like to put a special thank you to Mr. Saylor. He has so much experience in the business. He brings a lot of good recommendations, which we'll talk about a little later. But I just want to go out and say thank you to all the food truck operators that I've met with in the out in the parking lot. And it's exciting to see this come to a good place where we can make the rules work. So that was our mission. So, and Chris, go ahead.
Thank you. I would echo Mr. Gregory's comments, especially about staff. Just a joy, a pleasure to work with them. They very quickly were able to gather the information that was presented to us from the community, bring it back in a way that was easy to digest. The recommendations were concise. It's a work in progress. Even now tonight, we're seeing additional recommendations, such as how do we eliminate or take advantage of some of the duplication of information found on the county forms? How can we streamline that? Great recommendation. We talked a little bit about that during some of the meetings. We still need to work on that. Can't get everything done. This will continue to be worked on as we go forward. But I think so far so good. Some of the information that we wanted to bring back to council, we felt we needed some input from all of us on council. Downtown corridor, for example, didn't want that to be just two council members' decision. We wanted everybody to input.
And it was not one thing I'll compliment staff on is that they got it down to 100 feet.
Yes.
Which makes me more comfortable because it basically covers what we wanted to. So, but it's definitely up for discussion with the council.
Right. So, I think what I said earlier about carts, the non-motorized carts, the push carts, that can be brought back down the road. Just want to say thank you very much to staff and to the food truck operators that came out and participated. Those that were brave enough to get up and voice their concerns and share their opinions. Thank you very much.
So, John, may I make a comment?
Sure. Yeah.
So, there's a few things. I want to repeat what Mr. Bausch had to say. I agree with the process being more efficient so we don't have duplication, and that's something we could ask the staff to look into doing. The other thing I think it's really important is when we have these rules and regulations, I think we need a process to set up a way to deal with conflict, not only with the ordinance, but you know, between two people like a brick and mortar business and all of a sudden you have a mobile food truck next to him or whatever's happening, a way to discuss it. And I know we did that somewhat on most of the big resolutions we do, so I think it's a good idea to have some kind of avenue, maybe letter writing and meet with staff or one identified person on staff or whatever it takes. It's important to deal with the conflict. That's where this all came from. And then the other one that Mr. Saylor also mentioned is clarify our staff on what enforcement is, where it's coming from, and how it's going to be enforced. I think that's a really good question. Also, Mr. Saylor brought that up, but I think that would be critical.
Well, I think, again, that's exactly what we're doing here is basically given staff direction to codify how they're supposed to handle these kind of situations, and that's what I think is important that we come together here. The recommendation tonight is to have specific direction back to staff on operational regulations, amendments to the zoning code regarding the following issues, and that's the generator noise, accessory furniture, temporary use permit requirements, setbacks, and proximity to downtown. So I think it'd be good if we just have council go through every one of those and have a round table on each one of them to see what everybody's talking and thinking about, and then we can move on.
Do you want to do like a straw vote, or what you want on each item?
Yeah, so first one obviously is a recommendation one, generator noise. So why don't we start, you know, Chris Bausch, if you'd like to start, and we can go on down the line.
Well, I think the generator noise, the best solutions are often the simplest, coming up a range of mandating a very expensive generator that was CARB compliant and quiet was very expensive. I think they ranged from $2,500 on up to, you know, $3,500. That was kind of a non-starter for me. Staff came up with the cover situation at about $300. I think that was a reasonable compromise. If a food truck operator didn't have a quiet generator already, the cover seemed to be a good solution. So I'm in favor of that.
Okay. Fred, comment on that?
Well, my problem is handling these one at a time because they're interrelated, frankly. And for instance, a lot of things weren't said. The advantage a fixed operator has over a mobile, for instance. Almost every single mobile operator is a one-item operator. He's either tacos, or he's enchiladas, or he's some other Chinese dish, or he's hot dogs, or he's hamburgers. Restaurants have a variety. They also have longer hours. They do have higher costs, but they have advantages too. But each one has an advantage in its own role, but they also have disadvantages. So the thing is to not have them impact each other unfairly, and yet to allow business to have the freedom to operate and function within health and safety regulations. And I see those that are before us primarily health and safety, and I like that. I have no problem with that. I like Mr. Saylor's amendments. I thought that they made sense. We shouldn't have a duplication. If we've already gone through a process with one jurisdiction, they shouldn't have to repeat the same process with another jurisdiction that when the two are already related. That made sense to me.
We're gonna get that too.
But see, other than that, going through these one at a time is just gonna take a lot of time that I don't think is necessary to spend.
I disagree with that.
Well, let's, like I said, that's basically a general comment on the whole situation, Fred. What we're trying to do is there's six items that staff really want some information back from council. So let's go ahead and...
Well, I don't have problems with any of them except that one.
Okay.
All right. So then, Pro Tem Gregory.
I'll repeat what Chris Bausch said. I think it's a fair and reasonable way to deal with the noise. If somebody has the money for a quieter generator, if not... It's a good option, so I'm
okay.
Good.
All right, Chris, Field.
I'm good with the generator recommendation.
Yeah, I kind of agree too that wherein that there's no shore power or no electrical power for them to plug into, which I'm hoping we can find a location that might be more conducive to that, where they have shore power and they won't need generators. And that is not the case, then certainly keeping it quiet is super important, I think, in the downtown area, especially if that's where it's going to be. So that would be a recommendation, I think, that we would have on that, Warren. Item two, accessory furniture. Staff is asking, you know, what is should not be permitted and what is permitted. So we'll start off again. Chris Bausch, do you have any items on that?
I think the 120 square feet makes sense. It's enough space for a temporary use. It's not really intended to be an all-day, all-night kind of situation. It's meant for someone to sit down while the food is being prepared, get your food, and then head on down the road.
Yep.
Same thing with the shade structure. It's not meant to be something that's going to encroach on anybody's property, but it's there to provide a respite from the sun, which we desperately need at times here in Paso Robles. So I think that's a great compromise.
Okay. Fred, you have any comment on item two?
Yep.
It made sense to me.
Okay. Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah, I'll agree. I think people standing in the sun waiting to order their food or waiting for the food to come out, it's important to have shade. And the, there's a lot of discussion because the previous didn't allow any seating or cover. So this gives a nice blend of both, and so I like it.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay. My question, maybe to Warren on this one or Piper, is when they do a TUP, do they have to have a site location, site map to show how they're set up and distances and setbacks and such? I assume that's the case.
Yeah, that's the purpose of the TUP is
exactly.
Basically to establish a site plan so that they know how to operate, and then when we do enforcement, it's clear what the rules are.
Yes, that's what I thought. So I would certainly agree with that recommendation that, you know, basically what we're trying to say is that, you know, public easement around their establishment is super critical for us, and that's what I think this would accomplish by having those three recommendations. So, okay. Moving on, then we have the one that Bill Saylor had a lot of comment on. That was the expanded temporary permit requirement, which is going to require a zoning code amendment, and which would have to, of course, go back to the Planning Commission for future consideration. So, start with Chris Bausch again on this one.
I think we had quite a bit of discussion on this and trying to come up with a fair way to allow private businesses to be able to enjoy the popularity of a food truck without impinging upon local restaurant owners, brick and mortar restaurants, and also the popularity of bringing food trucks in without creating this potential of overstaying their welcome. So a good balance of bringing them in for celebrating an anniversary or an open house for a one-day event, kind of in a situation for number three, and then celebrating for number four, doing irregular kind of events, you know, once every couple of months, but not setting up to do something every single day. And if you do something every single day, that's obviously more than seven events. You're removing the advantage that a food truck might have over a brick and mortar restaurant. And I think that's a great way to disincentivize setting up every day in a gas station parking lot, for example.
Okay. Fred, any comment?
I think generally it makes sense that there's an interesting situation, and a lot of this all revolve around the downtown area and mainly the main part of the city where we have a lot of restaurants and we have a lot of traffic, that's
right.
Tourism, et cetera. But some of these food trucks also become very necessary out in the industrial areas so that those people actually have a place to go for lunch that may not be the same thing every day. And it may not be a full line of food like you have in a restaurant, but it's something where they can get something to eat and then go back to work. And that's a whole different situation. And depending upon the nature of the area, I could not see one business having to get its own use permit in order to have a food truck come in every day, even if it's different ones, just to provide a place where its employees can go catch a bite to eat for lunch. So I don't want to see this used that way. That's my only concern.
Okay. Steve?
I like both of these amendments. I think that as we go through the process with the Planning Commission and back to the City Council, I think some of the issues ought to be discussed about this. In my history, and I don't want to show my age, but we had food trucks coming for lunch every day when I was working in an industrial area. And it's almost a different mechanism in a way, because either we need to be able to allow them to have a temporary use permit to go to multiple locations, maybe, because they're a lunch food truck business. Those are things you have to consider, I think. I like the way it's written, because if you're operating as a caterer for special event, the event has to get the TUP, or they have to have the permission. But if not, if you're setting up as a food truck only, then you have to have your TUP. So I think that's pretty clear, but the gray areas are what need to be discussed, because item number 4, it's the same thing where you have an on-site commercial business hosting more than 7 events a year. If it's downtown or wherever, it doesn't really matter where it is. When does that temporary use permit really need to come into play, and how it affects both the business and the food truck operators? I like the way it's written, but I think this is something our staff could refine in the process of the Planning Commission.
So a question real quick, Warren, on that item 3, would a food truck showing up at a particular, like a manufacturing plant, would that be considered a caterer? I mean, because he's only catering to that one company. It's not a public event. I guess it could be, but basically they're going to be allowed to come onto the site or on the property to do this. When we were going through growing up and things, it was definitely, they'd honk the horn, everybody come out and, you know, grab a hot dog and go back to work. But that was what I'm wondering, how are we going to interpret something like that? Is it
well, there's some different rules. So these kind of trucks are allowed to stop and vend from the street, from the curb, but it's only for a limited period of time, like 10 minutes or so. So I think that's kind of what you were explaining, and that doesn't require a TUP. But if they're on private property, so if they pull onto private property and they park there, that is a trigger for a TUP if it's not a catered event. And if it's just like lunch service kind of thing, mm-hmm. that would be a TUP trigger.
That's the way I thought it would be too, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, the idea with a TUP, I mean, there's some costs there, but the idea, we're trying to make that process as simple and straightforward as possible, so that these trucks that want to do that can get the TUP. You know, we can work, you know, with multiple sites for a single TUP as well. So if somebody that, you know, wants to do lunch in different locations, I think, you know, that's something staff can, you know, work out, because we don't want a lot of TUPs. It's a lot easier if a single truck has one TUP, and if we have multiple site plans, we can work that out.
Yeah, what I was referring to is mostly construction sites, you know, where everybody doesn't bring their lunch. So a big construction area, they just drive onto this property, and so it's not really, I guess, a manufacturing facility, but it would be on private property, so to speak. It would be on public property at that point. So
you're not going to stay.
Warren's trying to make. They're going to be there momentarily at least.
Yes, it's not for a long period of time. So
I do one more comment.
Steve, go ahead. Yeah.
There is another model, and it's Bill Saylor's model. He produces food at several different locations year-round. He's downtown in the park. He's everywhere. So I just want to make sure that this whatever system we set up for people like Bill, who have multiple locations, don't have to get 10 conditional use permits. We want to have him be able to work within his balance. So I think that's something that you could also cover at the Planning Commission.
Yeah, and because these are zoning code amendments, this is going to go back to Planning Commission and then ultimately back to City Council. So that gives us some time to refine this. So I think this kind of feedback is very useful, and we can incorporate that into, you know, what's going to go to Commission and then finally back to you for more review.
Okay. Very good. Councilmember Beal.
I think you answered my question. I was curious kind of the way that it would go back to planning and the level of input conversation, because there are a lot of strange things with this particular issue. So the Planning Commission can hammer it out and
so Planning Commission, when we go back, we'll brief them on this whole process. We'll do the same public notification and participation process at Planning Commission. and then Planning Commission will just then make yet another recommendation for council to consider.
Thank you.
So I had a couple things that Mr. Saylor kind of brought up again, and you know, the TUP, right now it's for a single event, but is that TUP good for a certain period of time? 30, is it 360? In other words, a year? What's the time framing for?
TUP is 1 year.
1 year.
Permit. Okay.
And it's for a site-specific location?
Yes.
So
we could work on it so that a single TUP could be issued for multiple sites as well. I think that's workable.
That's going to be a key, I think, right there. Yeah. Okay. And then the other question was the county health permit and what they have to do for that. Can we accept the county health permit as being?
That makes sense. We'll do some research in terms of, you know, how we can accept, you know, documents that the county's already approved. So we'll look into that.
Mm-hmm. And the last one is the cost. Right now we're at 206 for.
Yeah, that's you know, the minimum time for one staff hour.
Yeah.
But every year the council looks at, you know, the costs for different permits. TUP is one of those. So the council does have the ability to adjust it as they see fit.
So that's basically the cost of service, right? We can't charge any more than the cost to do this.
Yeah, I was just going to chime in that our fee schedule is set up as such where we're recovering the cost of service for a specific permit that's issued to a specific entity or person for a specific service or whatever permit. If we're not fully recovering the cost of that, then essentially your general fund is subsidizing, and so the money that's used for police, fire, streets, and everything else is subsidizing to whatever level that permit or that service that staff is working on.
Yeah, I was just you know, kind of wondering about a single, you know, single event, single time. It's rather high to do that, but then again, I'm not sure that that's really what it takes for timing. It doesn't matter if it's 1 day or 360 days, it's still going to cost us the same amount, basically. So, Chris Belch.
I see Paul Patty. He made a really good observation regarding the inspections, and I don't know if he made it, I don't think he made it here, but he made it to the ad hoc committee. It might be, if you could share that information about the reciprocity. I think that's already made some good progress on how that will work out.
Okay, Paul.
Paul Patty, Battalion Chief Fire Marshal. So we're working with the fire prevention officers within the county and Northern Santa Barbara County to streamline this process. Some of what you're talking about tonight with the duplication of information is already being addressed behind the scenes. It's not in a position that we're able to comment on it completely tonight where we're at. We hope to have something by the middle of January. We already have some preliminary items that are already addressing that, such as potentially providing when somebody applies for a food truck permit or a mobile food vendor, because it can be a trailer, mm-hmm. but we're excluding carts. That's not part of this. That they would be provided a binder. And in that binder would have all of the necessary information and permits that they would need and have on hand. So when code enforcement comes from the PD side, they would be able to go directly to that binder, see that everything is there. What we're also discussing too is that the fire departments, instead of having a mobile food vendor that goes to different jurisdictions, have to pay for inspections to meet the fire and life safety codes, is that throughout the county in Northern Santa Barbara County, that we produce a sticker or decal that goes on the back of the vehicle, much the same as the county health permit does. So this is all in the proposal mode right now, but that's what we're leaning towards, and the other jurisdictions have given us the direction that's what they're hoping for too. We just happen to be spearheading the process from Paso Robles to be able to make that happen. Did I answer your question?
You did.
Yeah,
I think it's a work in progress. You did great. So,
yes.
I think it's good timing for us to do this, and as planning goes through it, more detail will come out, hopefully, and by the time it comes back to City Council, more detail.
Yes, yes, hopefully by the time, we're hoping by the middle of January, and it's, what's hanging up right now is the holidays. So sure. People getting their information from their jurisdictions, meeting with their people, providing it to us. We already have a SharePoint set up for all the counties, or for all the jurisdictions in the county to dump their information into. I'm monitoring that. I pulled it today, looking at notes and what changes we have. We're having wastewater involved, county environmental health, code enforcement, county health, fire, planning. I think I caught all the entities.
The grease?
Wastewater. Yeah, for the grease.
So what we heard was that these food trucks aren't just here in Paso Robles. They go throughout.
Oh, yeah.
And they're
mobile. Yeah.
It's expensive. The 206 is just the beginning. So if we can help streamline that, that's...
And so currently, the way it is that if a food truck operates in San Luis, they're going to have to get an inspection done down there. They come up here and operate up here, they're going to have another fire and life safety inspection. What we're working on is being able to address that to have one inspection on a calendar year, and we will accept that with that decal on the back of the vehicle. That will just, to us, that will show us, yes, this vehicle has been inspected for fire and life safety, and in that binder, there's the information, so code enforcement, let me look at it. We may go just do a drop-in inspection at no cost just to look and make sure that everything is in order, because those hood systems in those vehicles need to be serviced every 6 months. And if it's used quite a bit, it's going to have to be cleaned more frequently.
Excellent. That's a great idea, Paul.
Yeah.
Okay. Well done. Great. Thank you.
Very much.
Fred, any comment on, well, I'm finishing up item three.
I think we did three and four.
We haven't gone to four yet. Finishing up. That last one was on the cost of a TUP. So moving on then to number four, special event temporary use permit requirement. That's going to be a zoning code amendment also. We have that up, and that's, I think,
we got clarification on that, I think.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, that's why I think that was good.
Further? Okay. All right, we'll move on then to item five, and that's the food truck setbacks from sidewalks. And that's operational required updates, and you can see what we have there.
No
Any
problem.
Comment? Starting with Bausch then, I guess, on this one.
And so this is...
Yeah, just Warren...
Point out, this was actually number six in the last ad hoc committee meeting, so it's turned into number five here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For those who are following at home in their programs. I think, again, this was quite a bit of discussion. I think staff did a great job in recognizing that different food trucks are set up differently, some with windows, some without windows, and different lots are set up differently. So there really isn't a one-size-fits-all, but it's incumbent upon the food truck operator to realize that they cannot operate in the public right-of-way. They have to respect that. If they're going to set up in a parking lot, there's a couple different ways they can orient their vehicle to take advantage of the stall where cars would normally park, and that's they're going to have to work that out with the parking lot owner, the building owner, the business that they represent that day, and come up with the best and optimal use. So I think this 9-foot setback recognizes that, so I'm good with that.
Okay. Fred, question or comment?
I have no problem with this one.
Okay. Pro Tem Gregory.
This is an improvement, actually, from item six before, and now item five, because it's very clearly explained what the setback is. I also like this one because it gives the staff, as part of the permitting process, a review of how they're going to set up, so they can work with people to make it flexible. So, okay. Yes, I like it.
Councilmember Beal.
I'm fine with this.
Yeah, I think this is, again, a good one. I do like the fact that we still have a little latitude with our staff to increase or decrease setbacks based on the TUP and the site plan, essentially, given everything's different. It's not a cookie cutter. So given you know, the site, they can actually make some improvements maybe on more or less room that's needed to keep the public separated. So no problem on that. And then our last one we had is on item six. Staff recommendation was to have the city park food truck buffer. And we have 100 foot is what's proposed. Comments?
Chris?
Chris Bausch?
So temporary use permits will not be granted on private property within 100 feet of the park. So the options on this were 100, 200, and 300 feet. And when the ad hoc committee and were discussing this, it became clear that some of those were a little too onerous, would restrict private property use of their own space. I think the 100 feet respects some of the historic property without restricting a property owner's use if they wanted to have a food truck used as a catering operation for, say, an open house or some kind of a celebration or an anniversary. They won't need a temporary use permit. They can still have a truck show up on their own private property, but it's only for the one day. It's not something that can be done on a forever basis or 2 or 3 day basis. So I think this is a reasonable compromise.
Okay, Fred?
My only concern would be, does this in any way affect the farmer's market? Because the farmer's market frequently has
its own special event with its own rules. None of this affects farmer's markets.
So I like item six for the same reasons as Mr. Bausch. It's less restrictive, but it does protect the businesses downtown. So I think it's a good buffer. So.
Councilmember Beal.
Yeah, I thought actually that this was one of the trickier sort of items. I think for the most part, the ad hoc agreed on all of the prior items. This is the one where there wasn't really clear direction. And there was talk about having it coincide with the downtown overlay. That seemed a bit expansive. You know, looking at a X number of feet buffer, that potentially felt a little arbitrary because, you know, you are drawing a line and making decisions. But once I saw the map, and I think the 100 foot buffer makes a lot of sense. I think this is a good solution, and I've heard from other people that this is a good solution.
So I wanted to bring up to the ad hoc, there was discussion, I believe, to have like a once or twice a year, put it in a spot where they're all together. For instance, between the Mars Pizza parking lot or in our city parking lot, or I even suggested possibly doing the street shutdown where they typically do the farmer's market and keep them right there in front of City Hall as a particular event. In other words, something that is tailored for come on down, you know, that kind of thing. So what was your thoughts on that?
Here's my recommendation, and I don't know if Chris, you can agree or disagree, but I think we should finish these six items first.
Well, that is part of it.
Well, I think we need to, I think that's additional direction that's not stated in any written form.
Okay.
I want those things too. I made several suggestions, but